Brome propped Wolf's head on the sandbag as if it were a pillow.
You're a good otter, Keeler. Listen, here's the plan. We'll get them all out between us tonight.
Gurad watched as Badrang poured poison into a flagon of blackberry grog.
Great season, sire. There's enough in there to lay an army out.
Badrang shook the small vial to make sure the last drops went in.
Clog could never resist a drop of blackberry grog. It'll be his last drop, laced with wolfbane and hemlock. There's not a creature born who could drink that and live to tell the tale.
He pulled Gurad close, his voice a sinister hiss.
Listen now, rat. Here's what you must do.
The rat called Oilback through his knife. It zipped through the air to bury itself deep in the driftwood spar set upon the beach. Captain Sram and Clog grunted as he tugged the quivering blade free and returned it to its owner.
Good throw, matey. I like to see a beast who's skilled at slinging a frog sticker. Do it again, Oilback.
The sea rat twirled his knife expertly, closed one eye, sighted, and threw hard. This time the blade went a third of its length into the timber. Clog clapped his back heartily.
Ha ha! You're a murderer born, Oilback. Now cock a lug, matey, and listen to a little plan that I've arranged for that stingy, grub-swiping former partner of mine.
The moon appeared over Marshank, casting pale light and deep shadow over the fortress where three separate schemes were being laid, two for death and one for freedom. Brome hastily rearranged his corsair gear. There was little difference in the ill-assorted rags worn by Clog's pirates and those of Badrang's soldiers, and in no time Brome looked every inch the horde beast. Keeler did the same, improvising with Wolf's tawdry rags. Minutes later, two ruthless horde beasts marched straight past the guards and into the slave compound.
Stay at the rear and help any stragglers,
Brome signalled to Yarrow.
Righto, listen, friends. All you have to do is follow Keeler and me. If any beast stops or challenges us, don't you say a word. Leave the talking to me. Stay in the shadows as much as possible. Don't hurry too much. And above all, be silent.
They set off towards the main courtyard, with Brome and Keeler leading the group. Badrang corked the flagon, shaking it well before he gave it to Gurad.
See if they're asleep. Don't chance it otherwise. If everything is all right, then sneak up close to Clog. He's usually sleeping near to the largest campfire. Place the flagon in his paw, or as close as you can get to it. That stupid, platted buffoon doesn't care what he drinks. When he wakes in the morning, the flagon will be the nearest thing to him. He'll pop the cork and guzzle it right off. I know him of old. Go now. I'm trusting you to do the job right, Gurad.
Swathed in a dark cloak, the rat left the longhouse. Standing in the shadows at the side of the longhouse was another cloaked figure. Oilback held his knife by the blade, ready to throw. The doorway area was illuminated in a patch of moonlight. His paw trembled a little from the tension of waiting and the enormity of his task. It was not just any common crew beast that got to kill Lord Badrang, the tyrant of Marshank. No, it was he, Oilback, the best knife thrower in all Captain Clog's crew. He heard the creak of the door as it opened. Tightening his grip on the blade, he closed one eye and took aim. A cloaked figure stole out, shutting the door carefully behind it. Oilback grunted with exertion as he hurled his weapon. It was a good throw. The cloaked figure collapsed silently off the porch. Oilback hurried forward. Retrieving his knife from Gurad's throat, he wiped the blade, giving a low snarl of dismay when he saw the dead features of the creature he had slain. It was not Badrang. His footpaw struck something, a flagon of wine. Never being one to pass up a free gift, he rammed it into his tunic and turned to run away. It was at that exact moment Brome was passing with the slaves. Oilback ran slap-bang into Brome. There was a moment's silence as they confronted each other. Then Brome said in a quiet but commanding tone,
"What are you doing around here?"
I'm getting rid of this dirty spy for Lord Badrang. He's one of those corsairs. I caught him hanging about here.
Good.
He was about to turn away when Oilback became suspicious.
Just a moment, mate. What are you doing with that bunch?
Kayla stepped in boldly.
If it's any of your business, we're putting them in the prison pit. Lord Badrang doesn't want this lot escaping like the others. He wants them down the pit where he can keep an eye on them.
Oh, right. Well, I'll bid you good night.
Unfortunately, they were both travelling in the same direction. Kayla and Brom were forced to walk along with Oilback, who was heading for the main gate, which lay in the same direction as the prison pit. They walked in silence with the slaves following. Oilback glanced at the 30 creatures.
You're going to have a job on your paws getting all them down that pit. They'll be standing on each other's heads. Do them good. We're not here to argue. We carry out our leader's orders and don't ask too many questions.
The Sea Rat nodded agreement.
Aye, that's all the likes of us can do, eh, mate?
Though the gates of Marshank were open to the corsairs camped on the shore, there was still a sentry posted on top of the wall. It was the ferret Bluehide. He saw the slaves being led to the pit and called down.
What in the name of frog feathers are you doing down there?
Hurlbank winked at Keela and shouted back arrogantly.
What does it look like we're doing? Taking a swim?
Bluehide shook his spear.
Leave that grating alone. All those beasts can't fit down there. Besides, there was three escaped from that pit.
Brom sighed wearily. Placing paws on hips, he called out in an insulting manner.
It's none of your business how many slaves Lord Badrang wants us to put in the pit. And another thing, those three wouldn't have escaped if a sentry that night had been keeping an eye on this grating. They broke out by moving it.
Bluehide fixed his eyes on the grating, leaning his elbows on the wall top.
Well, they won't escape from there tonight while I'm watching.
You weren't put up there to watch grating, slophead. It's your job to keep a close eye on those corsairs on the shore.
Now Bluehide was completely confused. Keela chuckled as he slapped Oilback heartily across the shoulders.
Ha ha ha! That showed him, eh, matey?
Oilback continued on his way, laughing falsely as he answered.
Ho ho ho, it certainly did, mate. I'll just take a look out there myself. You can't trust corsairs, you know.
Keela and Brom waited until Bluehide had his back to them on the wall top, then shifted the heavy grating to one side.
Phew, that was a close thing,
the young mouse murmured under his breath. Outside, in the shadow of the wall, Oilback wiped sweat from his nose, muttering silently to himself.
Phew, that was a close thing.
He uncorked the flagon and took a deep drink to calm his nerves. Brom and Keela ushered the freed slaves into the pit and then climbed in after them, pulling the grating shut over them once they were in. An old mousewife called Guillaume started to complain aloud.
It's stuffy down here. I'm stuck like a pea in a pod. Why did we have to come into this dirty place?
Brom was thumping the walls to find the opening.
Hush, Mother. This is the way we're going to escape. Keep your voice down.
The main gate was open. Why didn't we just go out that way? And don't call me Mother, cheeky face. I'm not your mother.
Keela clamped a paw across her mouth.
Silence, you old scold. Brom knows what he's doing. We wouldn't stand a lame seabird's chance of walking through clogs, Cruiser Freedom. This way we'll come up between some rocks beyond their camp. Have you found the opening yet, Brom?
A shower of loose earth and some pieces of driftwood fell onto the heads of Keela and Guillaume.
Aha! Here it is. For a moment I wasn't sure I could find it. Good old Grammy did a great job disguising his tunnel. I'll go first. Keela, you and Yarrow help the others in and bring up the rear. We'll have to move fast. There's not many hours left until dawn. The last thing we want is to be caught out on the open shore.
It took a considerable time to get all the slaves into the tunnel. They pushed up against each other in the darkness. Infants began whimpering and Guillaume started to complain again.
Oh, it's dark and stuffy down here. I don't like it.
Yarrow shoved her further along from behind.
None of us are exactly joyful about being down here, old one. Just keep going and put a latch on your lip. You're upsetting the little ones.
Stop pushing me, you young rip, and mind how you speak to your elders. Oh, dear. There's sand falling on the back of my head.
Brom crawled as fast as he was able to. Hearing Guillaume's last statement added to his haste. He knew the tunnel was only a makeshift affair and could collapse at any moment, particularly now with the added disturbance of 30-odd creatures blundering their way through it. Suddenly, just when he thought he was at the end of the tunnel, Brom found he could crawl no further. The young mouse let out a groan into the thick air. The tunnel had caved in at the exit end. They were trapped.
Chapter 25.
Rose was wakened by Martin's cry and the great feathered bulk of the grey heron rolling over her. Something brushed by her. She felt slithering scales and kicked out at them. Martin was locked in the coils of some reptilian creature. What it was, he did not know. It felt like a snake, but it had more than one head and tail. Stabbing viciously with his short sword, he was rewarded by the sound of anguished hissing as the coils fell away from him. Nearby, Grum swung out with his ladle and caught something hard on the skull. It went limp. Palom hung on grimly to a third sinuous shape as Rose battered it with a supply pack. Martin felt another reptile at his back. Swinging sharply, he slashed crosswise and stabbed down twice. The creature was instantly slain. Rose was still hitting with the pack as she cried out in the darkness.
Fire, Grum! Make fire!
The mole fumbled for flint and tinder as Martin found Rose and Palom in the darkness. Afraid to use his sword in such close proximity to them, he dropped it and went headlong at the creature they had been trying to tackle. Butting, punching and kicking like a mad beast, Martin rendered the thing senseless. There were no more opponents to fight. They stood still while sparks flew and Grum could be heard blowing on the tinder. Suddenly, there was a small flame. The mole fed it with dry grass and twigs. In the ensuing firelight, they viewed the attackers and the attacked. It was the two slow worms they had first seen on entering the marshes. They were both dead, slain by Martin, and lying stunned close by was an enormous grass snake and a young adder. Grum shuddered violently.
Serpents!
Palom scrambled over to the limp figure of the warden.
I think they've killed him.
Rose was at his side instantly.
Let me take a look.
As she inspected the big bird, Martin called Palom and Grum to help him. Between the three of them, they heaved the bodies of the four reptiles into the deep ooze of the marsh.
Over here, this bird is alive.
Rose was massaging the warden's long neck. His eyelids fluttered feebly as she rubbed skillfully. One of the heron's eyes opened momentarily. It managed to croak. The mousemaid put a paw to its beak.
Yes, I know. Be still now. Those snakes nearly strangled you. Grum, put some water on to heat and see if you can find some soft moss and herbs to make a poultice.
As dawn broke over the little camp, Rose sat nursing her patient. The warden was a fierce bird, quick to recover and hard to keep still. She had bound his neck with a warm, soothing poultice of moss and herbs, checking the rest of him to assure herself that the young adder had not struck him.
You'll be all right. The adder didn't bite you. Warden, please lie still. Your neck was badly squeezed. Try not to move it.
The grey heron tried to rise, but fell back croaking hoarsely.
Snakes are lawbreakers. I will punish you. I am the law.
Grum looked up from the soup he was making.
Don't you never be silent, bird. Close thy good beak.
As they were held up by the warden's injuries, breakfast was a leisurely affair. Palom roasted some vegetables, leek, pennycress and shallots. Grum made excellent wild celery and herb soup, then experimented on some barley scones. The warden became so fierce when Palom tried to feed him soup that the hedgehog hid behind Grum.
I don't think he likes your soup.
Grum shook his ladle at the heron.
Don't be natural, creature not licking my soup. He never grow big and strong like I.
I am warden of Marshwood Hill.